Welcome to Catholic Comments. This is Wendy M. Wright.
And I'm John O'Keefe. Our guest today is Eugene Selk, who is Associate Professor of Philosophy here at Creighton University. Dr. Selk is a specialist in the area of science and religion, which will serve as our topic for today. Welcome, Dr. Selk.
Thank you.
Sometimes people will say that, gee, you either need to believe in science or you need to believe in religion, that there seems to be in the popular imagination this dichotomy. But from a Catholic perspective, that's a false dichotomy. Can you say something about your experience, particularly with students, and that question?
Yeah, let me begin with a false dichotomy, because I think that's an important point. There's a long tradition in the history of Western Christianity of the harmony of faith and reason. Well, on the side of reason, that's where science falls. So this isn't a recent phenomenon, that is to claim that they can be reconciled and compatible. There's a history of this that goes right back to the beginning of the church. More specifically, on the issue of evolution, Pope Pius XII in 1950 came out with a statement in which he said evolution is still scientifically debatable, but it seems to be increasingly well confirmed, and it's acceptable as long as one regards the humans as in some way distinctive.
So that was back in 1950.
That was in 50. But then in 1996, and this is unknown to many Catholics and Christians of other denominations, that John Paul II came out with a statement in which he said, now the theory of evolution is well confirmed. And he even made it stronger than that. He said, it's better confirmed than most other scientific theories.
So there is then, I think, a relatively recent tradition, but a strong tradition of affirming evolution, but a long tradition of affirming science. And if we think about even pre-modern science to the ancient philosophical tradition, we have this tradition of faith and reason. I want to turn that into a question, though, or a comment. When it's interesting to me how personally this has been a big factor in my life. I remember when I was a young person, I was one of those kids who thought that faith and science were antithetical. And when I was in high school, I was a professed atheist because I thought, you know, how could I believe in God when, you know, there's all this evidence for evolution? But nobody had really told me that there was this possibility of reconciliation. And when finally someone did, and this became a point of entry to the church for me, it was like an epiphany. But now, all these years later, I still find myself amazed at how many kids, especially those who have gone to Catholic school, still think that there's a conflict between science and faith in the Catholic tradition.
And that is surprising. What students don't seem to, and others don't seem to realize, is that the science before the scientific revolution of the 16th and 17th centuries was Aristotelian science, and the church used that in both in philosophy and theology throughout the Middle Ages. So there was even then an embracing of science, an attempt to harmonize science and religion. There's a quote from John Polkinghorne, a contemporary British philosopher, whom I'm very fond of, a scientist turned theologian philosopher who writes extensively on the topic of science and religion. He states, you don't have to commit intellectual suicide to be a person of religious faith. And I think that needs to be continually emphasized.
That's an important point. And my sense is that this the harmony of faith and reason grows out of a theological anthropology, which is really deep in the Catholic tradition, which is that we are created in the image and likeness of God. And despite the fact that that image is wounded in us and there is sin, that there is still in us the capacity to think, to reason, to look around us, to create art and music, which ultimately if well directed, will lead us to a deeper knowledge of the creator of the creation. And so to gaze into the creation from a Catholic perspective, we're given the gifts to do that. And, you know, I think that sometimes there's this anthropology that floats around that would say, oh, anything human, anything we would do with our minds, God is absolutely other. And that's certainly not a Catholic position.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons for the resistance to Darwin's theory is this idea that it somehow diminishes humans. That is, they're just like other animals, so they're no longer in the image and likeness of God. But that's a misunderstanding of the modern scientific view of humans, because granted that we are related to all living things through the evolution, nonetheless, there are many distinct characteristics of humans, and biologists and psychologists can come up with a long list, but I'll just mention a few. Humans are able to analyze and reflect. They're self-conscious. Humans can engage in intense relationships and deep relationships, and that includes a relationship with God. And there's no other creature who seems to be able to do that. Humans have moral sensitivity. So there are, despite our close relationship to other animals and our historical relationship, there are many distinct features of humans.
One of the things that my students bring up often, and this I would say especially the younger ones, the freshmen, is the issue of Galileo. And they find it really hard to understand how the church could have waited so long to remove the condemnation of Galileo.
Yeah, well, I agree that I think it's a bit of a scandal that the church did wait so long. But there's a lot of misunderstanding about the Galileo affair. The factors that led up to the famous trial in 1633 are quite complex. And I'll mention, so it's usually the incident is just portrayed as a clash between the freedom of a scientist to do science and explore science, and on the other side, a dogmatic institution, namely the Catholic Church. But that's a dramatic oversimplification. So if one goes back to the times, it was a time when there was still the clash between the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation was still very intense. And Galileo got caught in that. And the Catholic Church, in response to the reformers in the North, became much more conservative than it had in earlier ages. So it was sort of a reactive conservatism. So that was one factor. In fact, a number of historians have said, if Galileo had lived and written 40 or 50 years before, 40 or 50 years after, nothing would have happened. The timing was bad. But another factor is it involved a whole change in a worldview, because Western civilization had been lodged in a geocentric worldview for 2,000 years, since the ancient Greeks.
Since the idea that everything in the universe revolved around the
right,
Earth,
right.
As opposed
so, right.
to...
So this was intellectually and spiritually jarring.
Very
to,
jarring.
To have this new model.
Yeah. And so, as Thomas Kuhn writes in his famous book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, no civilization gives up a worldview easily. So it's not just a scientific theory. It was a whole worldview. And there was Galileo's personality. He was bombastic, aggressive in challenging his critics. He was a larger-than-life personality at the time, and that got him into trouble.
So basically, though, now the church has formally come out a number of years ago and reversed itself on Galileo, certainly accepts the heliocentric or, you know, that we go around the sun, not that everything in the universe goes around the Earth, and would accept very much the findings of science as part of our human capacity to explore the beauty of the world.
The heliocentric theory, which is the heart of Galileo's theory, was accepted even by the Catholic Church within at least 100 years mm-hmm. of the Galileo Fair, probably even earlier than that. But it was quietly accepted, and there was never any formal apology to Galileo. So the formal apology didn't occur until the 1993, when the Pope made had a formal ceremony.
As we're talking, I'm thinking about the many ways in which the modern church totally embraces the scientific paradigm. And I think the great symbol of this is the Vatican Observatory.
Yes.
And at Costa Gandolfo, there's an observatory and they have astronomers employed by the church, and the leader of it is a Jesuit, which is, I think, quite interesting.
Indeed, there's a branch of that observatory, the Vatican Observatory in Arizona. I think it's a small little branch, but there are a few people working there.
Yeah, certainly is evidence there on the Creighton campus. Our science building is the Righi Science Building. Right. Father Righi was a Jesuit who was involved in astronomy, and we have the remnants of a planetarium on the campus now.
Let's go back for just a minute to why there's this persistent sense, even among many Catholics, that there's a conflict between science and religion. Do you think this has to do really with the way in which the media reports religion and science, and that they really tend to report the position of fundamentalists versus science, and that stands for all Christians, and that they don't really have a nuanced view? Do you think that's part of the reason?
Yeah, I think it definitely is.
People who read the Bible literally.
Yeah. Well, biblical literalism, and the media tends to portray almost all Christians as belonging to that stream of Christianity.
Which is not the case for the Catholic
Church.
Which
is not the case at all. In fact, it's a minority group. But yes, I think it's the media in part. And then there are these very, very aggressive and loud anti-group of contemporaries who are hostile to all religion. Daniel Dennett, and most notoriously,
Richard Dawkins.
Richard Dawkins, yes.
It's really interesting because for a long time you had biblical literalists who were hostile to science, and that was the sort of loud voice. But now the loud voice is scientific literalists who are hostile to religion. And I'm curious, where do you think that's coming from? And we talked to John Haught on the program some months ago. But I'd be curious about your position on that.
I'm not sure about historically where it comes from, but you're correct in categorizing them as a sort of scientific fundamentalist, because for them, the only legitimate form of knowledge is scientific, and the only stuff which exists in the universe is that which is cataloged by scientists. This is sometimes called scientific naturalism, or simply naturalism. And John Haught, whom you just mentioned, sometimes makes the point that this is just as much a metaphysical position, it's not a scientific theory, as one who embraces a theistic view of the universe. It's not a scientific theory, even though its defenders, like Dennett and Dawkins, sometimes portray it as if it's part of the very meaning of science.
So in a way, they take their position on faith.
Yes, yes.
This is a fascinating discussion. Do you have anything more to say about somebody who might come to you and you as a philosopher and want to know how to approach the question of science and religion, some other ways of thinking about it besides these sort of concrete historical examples we've given?
Well, I must say in my response, I usually do take the historical response. I just say there's a long tradition, and indeed it's the mainstream tradition of Western Christianity, that science and religion not only can exist in harmony, but in principle must be in harmony with one another, because there can't be two different truths. So I usually do take the historical approach in attempting to answer that question, because for some reason, as you mentioned earlier, many Americans tend to think that this is a recent phenomenon, that is, those who attempt to reconcile the two, and they've always been in conflict. But in fact, in the history of Western Christianity and Western science, the conflicts have been much rarer than the long, long periods of harmony between the two.
We've been talking to Dr. Eugene Selk of the Philosophy Department at Creighton University on the topic of science and religion. Dr. Selk, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It was a delight to be here.
This has been Catholic Comments from Creighton University.
Catholic Comments is produced weekly by John J. O'Keefe and Wendy M. Wright, both members of the Theology Department at Creighton University. Creighton is a Jesuit Catholic university in Omaha, Nebraska.